CliffCentral.com.
Kungs versus Cookie and Three Burners. And this girl, nice. It's Wednesday. Let's get into a little bit of what's going on in the U.S. As you know, the other day we spoke to my friend Debbie Droke, who's in Washington, D.C. Debbie was on the Women's March, and she and I had a long and heated discussion about it, which I love because she's one of the most passionate people. And when she talks about these things, she's not afraid to make me shut up so that she can be heard. That's why I like her. Isn't that right, Deb? You don't care.
I don't care. How are you, Gareth? Good morning.
Morning. So with a week's reflection and a week of your new president in office, how are you feeling?
I don't even know where to begin. You know, I had like a list, like he does something different every day, so I don't even know where to begin. I guess he is my president. I have to own that, don't I? But
you know how sometimes in the Middle Ages, you know, medieval history, what would happen is the king would sometimes die and he'd leave like a 6-year-old in charge. You know, and the six
isn't that Game of Thrones?
Yeah, it is kind of like that. And then the 6-year-old would sometimes have a regent who would help them rule, but then occasionally they'd just be a brat and do whatever they wanted. And
yeah,
I feel so maybe that's a good analogy.
So he's the brat.
Yeah,
he's the brat, and then we've got Bannon, who's the white supremacist that's now ruling the kingdom. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. And do you really think that that's the most striking thing about Bannon? I mean, why he's called a white supremacist is because he used to run Breitbart, right? Which is a news service, and they used to run a lot of conservative news, and they would be the only ones who would print certain stories from that part of the world. He gets a lot of heat for being an anti-Semite as well, although there's no proof of that at all.
I think there is proof of his being anti-Semitic, but I'd have to go back and research that. He's definitely got the reputation of being the alt-right, which is a new word for being, you know, a Nazi. So we've got all these politically correct words now that, you know, you have to say what it really is instead of being, you know, these little soft words that make it seem a little bit, you know, correct. So, but again, you know, I'm giving you a liberal point of view and not a conservative point of view.
Sure.
I have many friends that think that he's doing just fine and that there's a lot of things that needed to be done in the United States that haven't been done in a long time because, you know, we had Democrats in the White House and now he's got to come in and clean it up. So, you know, I was going to try to say one nice thing about him every time I talked to you. And it was a stretch, but he did announce today that he wants to take the pharmaceutical companies to task and lower medicine, which I think, prescription medicines, which I think is really a good thing. Let's see what happens there. But other than that, it was a real struggle for me to try to be positive.
Well, let's just start with this pharmaceutical thing because he's going to do something very simple. What he's going to do is let the government and let various health insurance businesses buy their medicine from Canada. It was something that the Obama administration didn't want as part of Obamacare, in which they could have enacted at any time. So he's going to go ahead and put that into place. A lot of pharmaceutical companies in the U.S. are not happy, but they're not so unhappy that they're going to like protest the president. So he's probably
not like they're not going to make money. Right, and that's a fairly simple thing to do. So that's good though. That's something very positive.
I want to go back to something quickly because you know we're throwing around this term Nazi, and being a bit cavalier about it. And I know that you've thought about this, and you're not just someone who's been swept up in the hysteria of kind of calling people names. Because as many liberals will tell you, we don't like the way that Donald Trump keeps calling out Muslims and banning them from coming from certain countries into the United States and talking about minorities like Hispanics and blacks and Mexicans. We don't like that. That's name calling of a kind. It's racist. It's wrong. The most hyperbolic thing you could say about someone, what is the most wicked group of people that has ever lived on the earth? The Nazis, right? And if we're going to call,
absolutely,
if we're going to call some dude who's the chief of staff in the White House right now in a democratic country where a president was elected by a system that was put in place 300 years ago, but which has not bothered anyone for those 300 years in terms of the Electoral College, and he has to follow certain rules that are democratic in nature, you can't really call this guy a Nazi. He's not gassing anybody. To my mind, he hasn't killed anyone yet. The Nazis represent the very worst kind of humanity. Isn't it just a stretch when it comes to the world of name-calling to be upset about Mexicans or black people or gay people being called something, but then to go around calling other people Nazis?
Okay, so, you know, when I throw out Nazis, people are so politically correct today, Gareth, and you know, especially Democrats, sometimes we just, you know, we let things slide. Mm-hmm. And when you start looking at some of the steps that he's taking, and again, I hate to be an alarmist because you know me, I'm very much Pollyanna. I try to think of the bright side of everything. You look at what he's done to the press. And, you know, Bannon told the press last week to shut up and listen. And he's starting to call them the opposition party. So where did that begin, you know, back in the, what is it, the 30s, when Hitler started suppressing the press? Yeah, and censoring.
But that is not what Hitler's most famous for, Deb. And you know what I mean. Let's not be coy about this. Hitler is well known to history as being the most evil man that ever lived. You don't go calling people Hitler because after that you've run out of things to call them. There isn't a superior, isn't a worse position than being Hitler. And the minute you talk about someone being Hitler, you close the debate down. And I can't take that seriously. I'm sorry.
Well, okay. So let's not call him Hitler. Let's call him a man that is putting, it's making all of us question our democracy. One of the things that we've done in the United States is we've never questioned our freedom of press, our freedom of speech, and we've always felt that we've had the ability to say what we want and not be afraid of what might happen. And we've had a press that has zeroed in.
You just called him a Nazi. You can get away with that in America. That's why you know you're in a democratic country. I mean, the press can say whatever they want, and they have. There are many newspapers that have pretty much portrayed him as Hitler anyway. Now, my point is with Steve Bannon and saying that the media should shut up and listen, maybe they should. They didn't get the election right. They spent the entire hour, every hour, on all of the news networks, with the exception of one or two, taking Trump down, saying this guy is a lunatic, he's never going to win, not in our name, Hillary's fantastic. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Absolutely, you're right.
They've been caught out. They've been caught out as being shallow. They've been caught out for not being the descendants of Edward R. Murrow and Cronkite, Walter Cronkite. They've been found to be BuzzFeed and MSNBC and CNN and making up fake news. So when they get chastised by someone in the White House, because no one else is in a position to chastise them, people aren't buying newspapers anymore. People don't watch CNN in the numbers they used to. But unless someone like Trump or Bannon calls them out, they think everything's cool. And they believe they've still got a morally superior position because they call themselves journalists. We've proven they're not.
But Gareth, you've got to have, you know, you can't be selecting eventually who's going to be in the White House press. And you can't tell, you can't be like completely against what the press has to say. Have you seen our the press secretary? If he doesn't like a question that's being asked, he'll answer it. And then if the reporter will ask another question that's hardline, he goes, I'm not talking to you anymore. Go to the next one. And, you know, you cannot start with calling the press an opposition party. But let's just forget about that for a moment. Mm-hmm. What about his ban on these seven Muslim countries and this amazing, quick to act on an executive order which wasn't very well thought out. I mean, people were being turned away with green cards. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I'm very proud of and that I, you know, hope to continue to stay being a part of is that, you know, people are mobilizing and crying out, you know, that this is wrong. This isn't what our country is all about. You know, we're a really young country. We're like, we're going to be 241 years old in July. And that it compared to other nations and to other, you know, countries is very young. And we're based on immigrants and of immigrants coming. And that's what I said, like the last time I spoke to y'all, is that the only really, you know, Americans are the Native Americans.
You know what?
And so
you're now going into territory where I completely agree with you. First of all, just because we're hopping around a bit. I totally agree that the White House press corps should be a diverse bunch of people from all kinds of backgrounds. If they don't like you, they can't ban you. But the immigration thing is something I think South Africans also feel very strongly about. Mabali's brought this up before, is that the very people who often say, oh, well, this immigration policy of Trump's is so wrong. And I happen to believe, like you do, that it is wrong. But they, for example, in South Africa will be xenophobes. And they'll say, well, you know, we don't want any people from Zimbabwe here. So we've just got to be careful about hypocrisy. The other thing is that Obama actually bombed most of these countries throughout his presidency. You didn't see much outrage then when people were being killed. Now they're just being turned away at the border, but Trump's the Nazi.
I don't really know about when you're saying like all the countries were bombed. You're saying?
About seven of them out of the 12. I think it's there were 11 or 12 altogether that have now got the travel ban.
No, it's seven of them, and it's for 90 days, and then 120 for the refugees, but. I just read on a little news thing that it'll probably be indefinitely. And, you know, I mean, it's Muslims now. But, you know, when my grandparents were coming over, you know, it just depend on who came over first. The Irish hated the Italians and the Italians didn't like the Jews or whatever. But they all still came over, and everybody has their prejudices. But we never really closed our borders. We were isolationist at one point. And during the war, before we got involved in it, you know, we did have an incident where there was a ship. And, you know, you're really into history. I only knew about this. It was never taught in school for me. We turned a ship away, the San Luis ship. It was off the coast of Miami and Cuba for 30 days. Mm-hmm. We turned them away. And when they went back to, I think it was Amsterdam? I can't remember what country it was, but they all went to their deaths. And it wasn't until I went to the Holocaust Museum did I even realize that had happened. And, you know, I called some of my dear Jewish friends and I asked them about this. And of course they knew about it, which I didn't. And I was so ashamed to, to be an American and to realize, you know, and we're not angels. Trust me, I'm not saying that, you know, I haven't put ourselves on a pedestal. We're no angels. But I was so shamed by that. And I know it's very dramatic of me, but, you know, I was in New York City this weekend and I went in and out of JFK. And so I was at a convention actually with a bunch of South African friends. And this was announced. And, you know, I immediately thought of this ship. What are we doing? The people that were turned away, especially these refugees, this is a human rights thing. This isn't about terrorists. These are about people that are desperate to come over and start a new life. And it's not easy when they do come over here to start a new life. That's their own set of problems. But, you know, what are we coming to if we, the United States of America, that's based on immigration, if we start closing our borders to now it's Muslims? Back in our day when our grandparents were coming over, it was Italians and Poles and whoever. Now it's just the scenario has changed and the demographics have changed, but we're closing our borders. That's not what we're all about. And yes, you know, Gareth, I'll come back to the press. They did have it wrong. And, you know, and I think I mentioned, you know, am I living in such a bubble in Washington, D.C. that we didn't see the people that weren't being heard? We were, and we weren't listening. And, you know, a lot of these, you know, Midwesterners that are, This is what scares me.
Well, look,
Midwesterners.
I think you make a very good point about immigration, and it does, it makes people very emotional because I think many Americans are only second or third generation, including Donald Trump, for God's sake. So we should wake up to this, and it's a thing that everybody should get over, because no one owns a country more than other people in that country own it. And even a recent immigrant is just as important an American, if they are an American citizen, as someone who's been there for 12 generations or more. So
absolutely.
Get over us.
Absolutely.
All right, Deb, we've got to unfortunately wrap it up for this morning. I love talking to you. Thank you very much. We'll chat some more about some other stuff that's going on in America in a couple of weeks' time. Love to the family and love to America.
Thank you.
All right, I think that line's breaking up quite badly too.
Oh, well, the timing was perfect.
At least it lasted for most of the conversation.
Yes, it did.
All righty. Well, if you've just woken up, it's Wednesday morning. The 1st of February is here, and we are looking after you in the traffic or on your way to your appointments. Maybe you're already there. Maybe you've been at the gym this morning. Maybe you dropped the kids. We had to look after you. What do you have for us, Mavs? What do we need to know about our world and the condition of our world right now?
Well, look, we mentioned Gerinel earlier, so let's play that clip. It's just a brief, you know, snippet of some of the things that he had to say with regards to his decision, which, you know, some people were surprised by. Some people, you know, his decision made them happy, and other people were very, very disappointed and upset. So let's listen to Gerinel.
God forbid we should let people choose their own careers, huh? Wouldn't that be a terrible thing?
I just want to make it clear that this decision wasn't a sudden decision. It wasn't something that I decided on yesterday. There's been consultation, a conversation, going back a year or more.
Don't you want him to say Mr. Pistorius every time he opens his mouth? Huh?
My career and about what I would want to do. But when I made a decision, I decided to implement the decision. It wasn't easy. It was very difficult for me. Even this morning it was difficult. I'm leaving behind a lifetime. 36 years of prosecution is a lifetime. I did it because I wanted to. I did it because I thought...
Can you imagine 36 years of criminal prosecution?
Oh, can you imagine all the... seedy characters you've Ooh, well, dealt with.
I think it must take its toll on you psychologically.
Yes.
Whatever you go on to after this. And I think the biggest problem that his critics at this stage have is that he went to go and join AfriForum because they don't like AfriForum, which is fine. You have a, you know, you have a lot of room to dislike AfriForum. I haven't agreed with a lot of their positions and things. They seem to me to be interested in a small community of people and not always interested in what's the best for South Africa. But they also do a lot of good work. They do a lot of mobilization. They are what a minority interest group ought to be, pursuing the interests of the minority. Some people think that that's not cool. And people are, frankly, a lot of the time, jealous of the way that they are able to organize. It's not that different to the way that Obama used to organize in Chicago as a community organizer. On a different scale, obviously. But Gerinel has done his service to South Africa, so why would anyone have a problem with him getting out of the NPA? 36 years of having to hunt down, prosecute, and put together cases that get the worst people into jail. Forget about the most famous one, the Oscar Pistorius trial, which we know him from. This guy's been working there for years. And as Mabale says, you can imagine the kind of horrible people that he's put behind bars. Thank you for your service, is what we should be saying.
I was making a difference. I did it because I thought I was acting for people without voices in prosecution. My main concern has always been that everybody should be equal before the law. I've known and I've read and I've seen more and more perception that we are, that there might be selective prosecutions. And if that is so, then I think it's absolutely brilliant to have an organization that can just make sure that everybody's really equal before the law, that there are no selective prosecutions. And I've not had a single question about my political affiliation at any discussions with Africa. I've never had a political agenda, and I don't have one now. No? I've been a prosecutor for 36 years, and I think I've built up integrity that I'm proud of over the period of 36 years. I won't sell it. I won't sell my integrity. I think it's absolutely a challenge to create such an office to be able to do that, to ensure that justice is done. I'm here because of the challenge. I'm here because we're creating something new. I'm very excited to do it.
But if that perception is incorrect, then you'll be unemployed.
Indeed.
Wow. Okay. I think that was Adrian Basson at the end there. All right.
Right. So, you know, the journalists, or some of the journalists, then tried to get Gerinel to comment on, well, do you guys have a target list? Do you have a hit list? Is the president number one on that list? But Nell would not be drawn into who was first on their list. But it doesn't take the mind of a rocket scientist to figure this out. Earlier, AfriForum CEO Kali Creel had said that Nell's appointment would send a clear message to corrupt politicians and officials on national, provincial, and local government levels that they can no longer be indemnified from prosecution due to their political contacts. So, yes, I'm willing to bet that they do have a hit list.
Oh, yeah. And if the president isn't near the top of it, they're wasting their time, right? But the point here also is that this is a civic organization. It's a non-government organization. It's an interest group. And they have, like any other private individual, you could set up the Mabali Moloi Foundation. Ben can set up the Ben Karpinski Foundation. And between you, you're allowed to pursue any avenues you feel are necessary in the law that allow you to make society, in your opinion, better. The more of those NGOs and civil society initiatives we have, I think the richer we are as a country. The more think tanks, the more people contributing to robust debate, to initiating actions against bad people, the safer our whole country is from the predation of state business and state enterprise and state concerns. Because they don't really care about you and me on an individual level. They want to do things. The nature of the state is that they try to be general about things. They can't be individual. Otherwise, they'd be favoring Mabali over Ben. And the problem with General is that they end up trying to please everybody, pleasing nobody. The more of these small interest groups we can have, the more successful our democracy will be in the long run. All right, enough about Harry Nell. There must be more interesting things going on than poor Harry's job change.
Well, would you like to know what South Africa's most Googled car brand is? And Ford. I know you're tempted to go there, but it's not.
It's not Ford Cougar?
No, the Ford Cougar incident was, you know, it affected a minority of South Africans, not the majority. So we're looking at the big picture here.
All right.
The research was conducted by Quickco. Quickco are a UK-based multi-franchise car parts distributor. What they did was they collected data to find out which car brands were Googled the most in 2016. In fact, they looked at it on a global perspective. Mm-hmm. The team looked at 193 countries that they could collect data from. They excluded countries like North Korea for obvious reasons.
Well, because we have no data.
You have no data. How are you going to work with that? Okay. Yeah. So 193 countries were included.
Right.
They were looking for trends, they were looking for patterns, and possibly, you know, maybe even for a few surprises. So the single brand that topped the list in the highest number of countries.
Yeah.
Ben, I'm going to ask you here because you're the car guy. I'm going to ask you for the guesses. So on a global scale, the single car brand that topped the list in the most number of countries.
Come on, Ben.
Sure, that is interesting. I'm going to go with BMW. Because they do real innovative stuff, plus they got lots of cars and lots of markets.
Well, you're not far off. BMW is the second highest on the list, right? Oh. But the number one brand considered by most countries is still Toyota. They've had a long run, haven't they?
Very good.
Yeah. In 74 countries, second was BMW with 51, and then third was Hyundai with 17. These three brands combined make up 73% of all the top searches around the world. This is according to Quickco. Hmm. All right, now let's get into, you know, stuff that's closer to home.
All right.
So the most searched brands in Southern Africa, this includes South Africa, Namibia, and Botswana. Which was the number one searched brand for us?
There I'm going to go with Ben's guess and say BMW.
Okay. Ben, are you going to change yours?
Oh, it's so tough because Toyota has Buckies as well. And they got the Quantum.
Yeah, you know, and then I mean, in parts of Namibia, those kind of cards could come in handy.
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic, this.
Well, yes, BMW is there, Gareth, but again, it came in second because the number one most searched brand in South Africa is Mercedes.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, They've cleaned up. They really have in terms of street cars, you know?
Well, they've got more flash.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, they've got a variety of things. I mean, they even do trucks. Big trucks.
I didn't realize that there were so many of us who could actually afford one of those.
But it's not so much that. It's like people are always looking for things that they can't have online, whether it be porn, whether it be cars, whether it be like restaurants.
Well, that's true. I mean, Google searches don't necessarily translate into purchases.
Hell no.
Yeah. Toyota was the most popular choice overall on the continent, with 28 countries picking the Japanese company. Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Renault, and Hyundai were also searched on the continent.
Right.
Now, one surprise on the continent was Niger, whose citizens Googled what were you talking about earlier? Hypercars, supercars.
Mm.
For Niger, there was a supercar that came out as the top search.
Pagani Zonda.
I'm sorry, what?
Pagani Zonda.
I have never even heard of that before in my life.
Beautiful. Oh, it's beautiful.
Well, what's the answer?
It's a Bugatti.
Okay.
Holy mackerel!
That was the number one search in Niger, Bugatti.
All right.
Everybody has dreams, y'all. Everybody has dreams and aspirations.
That's brilliant. So, you know, Hillary was in so much crap for her emails.
Well.
Yes. We quickly forgot about the emails when Trump, you know, assumed position.
Didn't he say he wanted to put her in jail?
Yes, he did.
Well, she sat in front of all those people. Anyway, in the world of sport, we all know there's lots of dodginess, right?
Sure.
And we all know that the IAAF actually makes FIFA look like choir boys from time to time, because the Olympics has been so dodgy. Athletics, all the doping, Russia basically taking control of stuff. So Sebastian Coe, whose empire name is Lord Coe, big ruler, whatever.
Yeah, he was in charge of the Olympic Committee in
the squeaky
England,
clean
right?
guy. Obviously, he was like this, you know, iconic athlete, world champion.
Dick pics.
All these kind of things. No, he's been pulled in front of committees, people asking him, did you know about irregularities here, doping here, all that kind of stuff. And he would be like, no, I had no understanding this was taking place, because, I mean, the cat's come out of the bag here quite heavily as far as the doping's concerned and all these federations falling foul of the laws. But he was always saying, I had no idea this was happening. This is all news to me. If I had known, I would have done more. But emails have now come up basically where he has said, I am now aware of this. 6 months prior to him saying, I had no idea about this. So he's admitted to knowing about all these skullduggerous sort of people. God, and emails have come back to bite him on it.
Well, you see, sports administration has got to be one of the most murky areas. Because you're really in charge of you're in charge of something that doesn't actually matter. And don't get upset, Ben. But you're not really...
I'm the one saying this a lot, too.
It doesn't matter. Like, if someone wins and someone else loses, of course there are, you know, spread bettors and people who do sports bets and people who spend a lot of money on sponsoring these things that have there's an effect on them. So it should all be investigated. But it doesn't change the world. You know, if the Proteas lose, people aren't going to suddenly go into flat panic and start selling the house and, you know, giving up the kids for adoption or any of that stuff.
They'll be socially irate.
Yeah.
But not economically ruined or anything like that, yeah.
But these sports administrators are sometimes former athletes, like Lord Coe, for example.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're former athletes. Now, athletes don't spend a lot of time improving their brains. This is not even controversial. They spend a lot of time improving their bodies so they can win. And then, obviously, there are a lot of them who are smart, too, but a lot of them are very dumb people.
Well, they have to prioritize.
Correct.
If they're going to be the best, then they have to dedicate the majority of their time to their physique.
So you've been a great athlete. Your country says, you were so good in the Olympics back in the 70s. We would love you to be the administrator for the Olympics when they come to London. And he goes, sure, no problem. But the guy doesn't have experience in running a major operation. He doesn't have experience in what moral and ethical imperatives need to be in place for you to be able to run public money properly. Right?
No.
So then when he does this, he's not lying when he says he wasn't aware of it. He doesn't know what he's doing because he's just a dumb sportsman. And that could be true for a lot of people from a lot of different professions, not just athletes. But in this case, what did you expect? You put an athlete in charge. Put an accountant in charge. You'll know that the books are done right. And if they're not, he'll go to jail.
Well, it's not so much about him not being qualified for it. This is just a pure case of lying. In that he was being informed by people, because when you're in a position like him, he's got people informing him about town planning, informing him about stadiums, informing him about team structures and stuff. He's not having to do that. He's the face. He's the guy who gives it the okay. He's the guy in the press conference.
He's probably thinking about his glory days in sport.
Which is fine. That's what he's there for. But this is just a flat lie. And now these emails are proving he was just lying. You don't have to be clever to know what a lie is.
Yeah, but also we know that there's a lot of dodgy behavior in sports administration. You know, in sport generally, there's a lot of money that exchanges hands.
Yeah.
It's very easy for people to be corrupted, to, you know, fall prey to the greed and to want to do dodgy things. So they lie.
I agree with you.
Stop lying. Stop lying.
Mandla, my boy, says, I loved Gelang Gork yesterday and Mabale Moloi Umuhleyazi.
Oh.
You're so pretty.
Thank you, Mandla. Thank you very much.
It's at least a much more respectful way to say, Mubs, I like you a lot, than can I taste your juice?
You know, like with the new year, there's improvement. Yes.
You think so?
And it's a good thing.
Can I taste your juice?
Oh, you see, I spoke too soon.
All right, what else is going on?
If Bill Gates survives the next 25 years, he's currently 61. He will be 86, but if he lives on to that age, he is likely to become the world's first trillionaire. This is according to a report by Oxfam.
That's a biggie, right?
Sure.
Trillionaire.
Yeah.
Let me write down the zeros.
Yeah, do that because we know that our Mets is suspect in, you know, between you and I, Gareth. Ben actually does.
Yeah, I got my pen and my paper. Look at my work. Like I used to make the teachers, you know, the teacher would say, show me your work.
Okay, so despite the report highlighting his commendable attempts to give away his money, and Bill Gates has given away a lot of his money, he's done this through his foundation, his net worth has increased by $25 billion US dollars since he retired from playing a part in day-to-day operations at Microsoft. This was back in 2014. So they've estimated that if he makes it to 86, his net growth will continue to grow in such a way that he will become the world's first trillionaire.
And if you didn't care about Africa, by what, 80 you could do it?
A trillion is...
How many zeros?
It's got 12 zeros.
Last year, his net worth stood at $75 billion US dollars.
75 billion US dollars.
Billion. That's 90.
I wonder if you could spend that in a lifetime.
Ooh,
I would really love to try.
If you did, I would have to give you some kind of applause for being able to do that. Spend that much in a lifetime.
I don't think you could actually physically do it unless you wanted to just lose money.
Well, you'd have to buy some pretty big things like countries and massive corporations. You see, if you buy massive corporations, you might make back your money.
Exactly.
You'd have to buy failing corporations.
And when you buy the countries and stuff like that, they'll still have value.
Right.
You can't ever lose the money.
A trillion.
Yeah. To estimate how much he'll be worth in a few years, researchers applied the average rate of growth that the ultra-rich have been enjoying. That's 11% growth since 2009. To Gates' current level of wealth, which is more than $84 billion US dollars now. Because, you know, last year he was at just 75.
Oh, so poor. How embarrassing for him when he looks back in his books and sees how poor he was back in 2005.
So he's got to get to what, 84, 86 to get a trillion?
86, so the next 25 years, they say. If he makes it to that, he's likely to be a trillionaire by then.
Nice. Well, you know what? He and his wife have said, and we're all jealous because we don't have a trillion.
Yes.
Of course we are.
I mean, that's...
All the potential of making a trillion.
That's the obvious thing.
But this guy and his wife have decided to give away almost all of their money. And I mean almost all. Maybe they'll keep a billion. But if you got $75 billion and you're giving away the 74 of it, that's like if I have $100,000... and I give away 90 of it. It's the same thing. If you have 10 rand and you give away 9 or 7, you know, 7 or 8 rand of that and you only keep 1 or 2, it's the same thing.
So what you're saying is Bill Gates is actually no hero.
I think he is.
Because I agree with you.
I think he is because they've done amazing work for malaria in Africa. They've done a huge amount to prevent the spread of malaria. They are he is already the world's greatest ever philanthropist. He has given more money to good causes all over the world than any other human being. Of course, he has more money than any other human being, but he didn't have to do that. Someone like Larry Ellison from Oracle, also billionaire many times over, doesn't give anything to charity. So you don't have to. I like that Bill does this. It makes him I think it makes him an interesting dude.
Yeah, great.
Good guy.
It's hard to comprehend because to live in that sort of stratosphere, I think we could all easily do it.
Ben, if you lived there, you wouldn't leave Seattle. You'd spend up a storm. You'd buy all the things that you wanted. You'd become a supercar collector. I know you. You'd get meows as a gold-plated bowl.
Throne.
Yeah. And you'd live your life. You wouldn't necessarily come flying into Africa providing mosquito nets.
No, I wouldn't get her a golf throw. That's a bit crass.
You wouldn't book out an entire airplane just for meowses to fly in.
No.
All right. Listen, we've got the two twin chefs that are here, and we're going to talk to them in just a moment or two. So stick around. That's some news for you this morning, just to get your appetite wet so you could start your day properly. And you are listening to CliffCentral.com, where we will fill your day up with even more exciting stuff. Wednesdays are terrific. We've got Womandla. We've got G-Man the Ad Man. We've got a bunch of really good shows on today, entirely apart from this one. So hang on for that. The twin chefs, Tebo and Lebo Ndala, will be with us in a moment or two. They're from Pretoria, and they are both in love with cooking in every way, shape, or form. So we're going to talk to them, find out what their story is.
CliffCentral.com.
All right. Remember that? That's Kanye West and Good Morning. This was before he met Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, and?
Well, I'm just saying it was before he became part of that power couple. You know, he was still Kanye West. And she was still... I don't think anyone knew who she was when this came out.
No, they did.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, maybe one or two people in Hollywood, but not a lot. All righty. So there are two beautiful young ladies who are from Pretoria who absolutely love cooking, but their gimmick is that they're twins. See, everybody has to have a thing. You know, Gordon Ramsay's the swearing.
The angry.
Heston Blumenthal is the chemistry.
He is insane, though.
Right. Some of them it's because they're fat. Some of them it's because they make dishes that only they can make.
Well, okay, what's Jamie Oliver's thing then?
The speech impediments.
Oh, what about you?
Isn't that his thing? Speech impediments and helping children to eat healthy school food.
I think maybe something that was like his thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, these guys have a company called With Love from the Twins. But we're going to first find out about cooking and about how they became the twin chefs. So, ladies and gentlemen, Lebo and Tebo, isn't that kind of your parents to call you both names that were so similar except for one letter? Lebo and Tebo, when they came in, I asked who was who. But because this is radio, it doesn't matter to you who's talking. You're just going to have to accept whatever they say and assume that it's the one that you think it is. So, how are you, ladies?
We're good, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having us.
Wow, what a pleasure. All right, so Lebo, you were the first one I met this morning by about a second and a half.
I'm 21.
You're the first born. you're the elder one.
No, we don't know who the oldest one is.
You don't know?
I'm just 21. My mom never told us.
Oh, is she keeping that a secret?
Yeah. Apparently, she doesn't know.
Well, she wasn't paying attention.
You know, maybe
I think she was out.
Maybe she was heavily medicated.
What, was she reading a book?
It's a bit of a stressful time in that moment, you know?
She was watching TV.
maybe she doesn't want to tell us. I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Now, listen. First of all, I know that twins often have a very special connection. I know that twins sometimes end up being similar in terms of their career choice, but it is a very rare thing that you should both be absolutely in love with cooking and you should both want to be chefs. There wasn't one of you who decided when the other one first came up with the idea of being a chef, oh, well, that's the last thing I want to be. Whose idea was this and how the hell did this happen?
It was a coincidence, you promise. Yeah. We were choosing, you know, like in grade 10, you have to pick subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And then
an extra subject.
You have to pick an extra subject. So we did it separately. We choose your science and your maths, and we needed a fun subject to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose hospitality. She did the same. And at the end of the day, I was like, hey, what's your extra subject? It was the same thing. That's how it happened.
that connection thing then is definitely true.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You were reading each other's minds, man. Stop lying to us.
Yes, we do have twin telepathy.
Now, would you like eventually to have your own restaurant and sort of run your own?
I think we're slowly building towards that.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
It's expensive business, though, to start,
it is.
Right?
So we do pop-up restaurants. So it's like a restaurant for one day.
Hmm.
It's like having a baby and then giving their baby back at the end of the day. You don't get to keep the baby and be responsible. So that's what
that's
we do
the system
moment.
Mabel is trying to get into. Oh. So she can experience what it's like to be a mom, but she doesn't have to stick around.
No, that's what nieces and nephews are for. Hand them over at the end of the day. Yeah.
So what kind of stuff do you guys like to cook?
Oh, we cook everything. We cook everything. I think our favorite cuisine has to be Asian.
Yeah.
Asian food. But we cook everything.
What kind of Asian? Because there's what? There's noodles and soups and sushis and...
I think we like Thai curries.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
Yes. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what? You've just made me hungry. I wish I hadn't invited you here.
All right, now you did mention that some of the chefs, you know, are a little bit on the heavy side.
No, these two.
I've always assumed that, you know, if you're going to be involved in cooking food and it's good, delicious, rich food, then how do you manage to, you know, keep things under control?
Weight wise, yeah. How do you stop yourself from eating all your favorite food when you're making great food that other people want?
We're just disciplined, and we're very health conscious also, and we just.
I think if you cook for yourself, you see what goes into the food.
Mm-hmm.
And so you control what you put into your body.
Yeah, so you just have to remember to be aware of it,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what would be on the menu if Mubs and I had to book a dinner for 12? What kinds of options would we have? You mentioned Asian food, but you'd have this restaurant you want to eventually build. Would it be, you know, normal commercial place where you can get everything? Or do you want to focus in on a certain area?
Oh, wow. I think our pop-up restaurants help us with that because we always have different themes. So we've had one pop-up where it was just a high tea. So it's just like pastries and stuff. And we had a champagne breakfast, which was breakfast stuff. And then we had a heritage day. It was like South African food.
So you're experimenting. You're getting to do a bit of everything. That's so cool. So with a pop-up restaurant, do you have to make a kitchen like in a tent, basically?
No, we use real restaurants or guest houses, whatever we can use that will be conducive for us.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Could people hire you?
Yes. Definitely.
So have you done any high-profile events? Like you've done this for an embassy or you did this for a private party? Or
not yet. We've done top billing once.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was really, really cool. Yeah, and we've done a conference for international students. And yeah, otherwise we just do pop-up restaurant.
So with top billing, who tested the food?
Azania.
Oh, Azza. All right. Well, we like her, so that's good. Also, a very beautiful woman.
Yes,
so, I mean, the three of you on one show, people must have exploded in front of their televisions.
Thank you.
All right. So when you do these pop-up restaurants, I would imagine that this is quite a new thing because they didn't exist before.
Yes.
This is a novel idea. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, you want to keep up a little bit of variety, right?
Yes.
So maybe if you had a restaurant, you'd change it every third day.
Yeah.
Do something different.
People are not bored because you don't want people coming to a restaurant eating the same food.
Yeah.
So you want to keep it exciting by changing it up all the time.
Mubs, what's on the menu for you? What do you want? What do you want them to make for you?
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
Well, I'm crazy about seafood. So give me prawns, give me langoustines, give me any of that stuff, and then I'm good to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Noted.
Ooh, crab. I've never had crab.
Oh, really?
I've always wanted to have crab.
Okay. With some burnt butter sauce and something.
Not in like a sushi roll. Like I want the full beast still with its pincers in place.
This is why
and I must crack the shell. And I want all of that.
This is why you get the squirts so often.
No.
You don't look after yourself.
I have a very weak immune system.
You put terrible things into your body, like the shell of a crab. What's wrong with you?
Crab and lobster. That's what I want to have.
How did this happen? Was your mom big on cooking? Did she put this love into you? I mean, I know you chose your subject. You've told us that story. But where does it come from in terms of your family?
I think my mom always loved cooking and we were always those kids that were always in the kitchen with her, bothering her and trying to cook with her. But then I think it came from the both of us. We just loved cooking so much. We just decided to make it our career.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
A lot of the chef world has to do with personality, though. So how are your personalities different? Like what does Lebo bring? What does Tebo bring? What's going on there?
Wow. So normally chefs are known to be very mean.
Yeah.
And we've experienced that. They're literally like Gordon Ramsay.
They chase people around the kitchen.
Yes, and they throw you with a plate. And you have to be quick enough to catch it so it doesn't hit your face. My sisters are very soft.
Uh-huh.
We like the friendly chefs. The not so intimidating chefs, because some chefs are so scary that you're so afraid to learn from them. But my sister and I are like good teachers because we're just so gentle.
All right. Yeah. I like the sound of that. Mm-hmm. That makes it, to me, that is an appealing thing. What about some sexy outfits? I mean, you know, chefs always wear those dowdy. You two could pull them off. You could look good in sexy outfits in the kitchen. Why do the chefs always look like they're working in a warehouse?
Oh, my goodness. And those ugly shoes.
Yes. They do wear ugly shoes. Is that just because they're on their feet the whole day, so they need something that's
they're
as comfortable
quite
as possible?
Comfortable.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
very comfortable.
So if a knife falls on your toes, nothing happens. But then it doesn't look attractive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So most of the clothes are put...
That's why they wear the knife. Yes. I had no idea.
Yeah.
All right. Have you ever had a kitchen injury?
Oh my gosh. All the time. She almost lost a thumb.
Yeah. I was
slicing
a vegetable on a running machine. Uh-oh. And it didn't have a protective thing. So I was like busy slicing and my thumb almost came off.
I just went cold.
Jeez. Yeah. I got over it very quickly though. Chefs are very tough.
Yeah, you get used to it.
To the point where nothing burns us anymore.
Yeah, I'm useless in the kitchen. I'm not even going to talk about what I can and can't do.
Well, you can cut tomatoes and avocado.
Tomatoes, avocados.
And then he calls that a salad.
I call it a salad.
Okay. Yeah, that's what he...
But it is a good salad.
It is a simple
Do you make
salad.
Your own dressing?
Look at how diplomatic that is. It is kind of a salad.
No, they're very gentle. They are.
All right. And I can tell you are the friendly chefs.
Yes.
All right, you two. I can't wait for you to have your own restaurant.
Thank you so much. I think we can all come
along. And now you've had these love from the twins pop-up restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that we need to know about you?
Well, we have another pop-up coming up on the 18th of February. It's a cheesy Valentine's dinner. So it's the first one for the year.
It is that time.
It's for the singles and the not so singles. So everybody's welcome. And yeah.
If you want to go along and find out more, withlovefromthetwins.com.
Yes.
Very nice. That's withlovefromthetwins.com, one word. And you'll be able to find out all you need to know about Lebo and Tebo. And thank you so much, ladies, for coming.
Thank you so much for having us.
What a pleasure. And you're from Pretoria, my hometown. So, yes. Of course, I'm going to support you.
Thank you.
We'll see when pop-up restaurants come around my area, then I'll pop up myself.
Oh, okay, awesome.
That'll be awesome.
Thank you.
I just don't leave the house, so it'll have to be in my driveway.
We can make that happen.
We really can do anything.
Very good. Thank you, ladies. Thank you very, very nice.
So thank you.
On the way, we've got Clive Vandenberg, who I'm very, very interested to talk to as well. He's an artist, a museum designer. He's got a brand new exhibition out at the Goodman Gallery. Until the 18th of February. So if you want to go and see something extraordinary, I think this is one for you. I've seen a couple of the pictures from it. And really, I think that he's addressing something through his art, which artists often do. You know, they push civilization forward. They allow us to reflect on how we interpret the world as it is around us right now. And this guy is doing exactly that. And he's doing it in a very powerful and provocative way. So I'm excited to talk to him. That's coming up in a moment or two, Clive Vandenberg. And we'll take your calls. You know what to do. Skype us, Cliff Central, one word. You can also send us a WeChat message if you're on that platform listening to us. Or you can WhatsApp us. Right, Mubs? Do you know the number?
079.
Yeah. You got that part? Yes.
Yes, 079.
And what else?
I don't know what happens after. I don't have the phone saved in my phone book like
Ben does. 079-748-2090.
Okay, I'll save it.
079-748-2090 is the number you can call us on. CliffCentral.com.